You're listening to Red Nation Online.
You're listening to the North of 49 Soccer Podcast. Interviews, analysis, and discussion about Canadian soccer with hosts Chris Williams and Steve Watcher. All right, here we are back with the North 49 podcast. And what a week it was in Canadian soccer with two Canadian teams in the MLS moving forward with a couple of nice victories. And unfortunately, one Canadian team suffering a big loss and entering the record books. Chris, how are you doing? And, you know, how did you like the games on the weekend?
Yeah, again, when all three teams are playing, it's quite exciting to be able to view each game and you know, pick apart what went right, what went wrong. Yeah, it's been pretty exciting, I would say, this past weekend.
Now, you know, we usually start off with Toronto FC, and obviously Saturday was a big day for them and, you know, a big event. But let's break with tradition and start with the Vancouver Whitecaps this week. The Whitecaps achieved a rare feat for a Canadian team on Saturday in that they actually defeated the Columbus Crew in Columbus. Columbus had been having their ways with Canadian teams so far this year and through you know, much of the existence of Canada being in the MLS. It was also another road win and another 3 points for Vancouver. You know, it wasn't the prettiest performance, but it was a victory. So, Chris, what did you make of the Whitecaps' performance?
Yeah, like you say, they got the win. And, when I look at Columbus, they're a disciplined team. Might not be the most exciting team to watch, but they're disciplined. They have their tactical awareness right. The coach there has done some good things in the past years, and they've been a solid team in the last few years. So for Vancouver to go on the road, I'll tell you what, last year they wouldn't have received that same result. They would have come up on the losing end of things. So in terms of their performance, like I said in the last podcast, they needed to watch for their defensive set pieces. I think Columbus capitalized quite well. Again, they didn't score. They had a goal called back. But I think Columbus did well to attack Vancouver. And I think that right now that's Vancouver's weak spot. The Whitecaps really need to shore up that line of defense in terms of their set pieces, the corner kicks against and free kicks against, because I think Columbus, you know, definitely threatened them in the air. So from that standpoint, they need to go back to the drawing board and really work on that, because, you know, other teams will punish them. They'll capitalize on those chances. Moving forward, their performance, I would say, you know, again, I always say Vancouver's an exciting team to watch, but this last game against Columbus, they seem to lack a little bit of flair and zest. And you know, I guess, you know, when you go on the road, you might not look for that. You and Steve, you'll probably agree. You want to look for the gritty result, the win, basically, or a point on the road. And, you know, again, from a fan standpoint, it wasn't the prettiest game to watch, but from a Vancouver Whitecaps fan standpoint, they got the win, and that's what you want to see. So from that aspect, I would say Vancouver would come away with that from that game feeling pretty confident and pretty good about themselves.
It was another 1-0 win for Vancouver. You know, I'd have to go back over their schedule and figure out just how many, you know, 1-0 wins or how many games they've won by a single goal so far. But it did seem a little bit like deja vu, and that, you know, that's something that's happened quite often so far at this point in the season. How much is it a sign of maturity that Vancouver keeps churning out results in matches that, you know, if you look at the way that the season went last year, that they probably would have lost last year?
Yeah, definitely. I think Martin Rennie, you know, the etchings of him and just his fingerprints are all over this. I mean, he's designed this team around a core group of individuals, and he's really gone to them and said, you know, really give them his full backing. And I think it shows in the field. You know, Gershon Coffey's putting in some solid, you know, minutes and some strong performances. Jade DeMeritt there. You know, their backline, I really like Vancouver's backline. Yes, they're weak on the defensive set pieces, but, you know, throughout the flow of play, they do some good things, and even in the attack. And, I mean, again, Martin Rennie has definitely designed this team to go into the playoffs, and I believe they will. So, again, from the standpoint, looking at the last year's results and the team last year, they look much more like a team. The chemistry is there. Even when they score goals, they're coming together as a team. So that's good to see. So I think Martin Rennie and the management upstairs will feel very happy that they're actually getting those points on the road.
How big is the depth in the you know, and the competition within the team? You mentioned Gershon Coffey, and, you know, he was a regular last year, and it seems this year he's having to work a little harder, like all the players, to get their starts and to get their minutes. You know, just how important is that for a winning team?
I think it's very important. I mean, you see Davide Chimiento, he's probably one of the most talented players in the MLS, but right now Martin Rennie is not implementing him in the squad, in the starting team, and it didn't even play in the last game. So I thought that's what Vancouver lacked, but Martin Rennie's showing that, you know, without that flair, without that creativity, Vancouver can still, you know, grind out a result and win. So, I mean, having depth on a team, I mean, if you're a coach, you're definitely not going to complain. I mean, if you look at the teams around the world, Barcelona, Chelsea, you know, Manchester United, great managers, they find a way to win and they find a way to utilize each and every player in the squad. And I think that's what Martin Rennie is doing here. And down the road, he should have it figured out with implementing the certain players, the right players at the certain time. And, yeah, I think he's learning, you know, in the MLS that he can be successful. So, again, he's done some great things early on here.
One player who's not having trouble inserting himself into the starting lineup is young Pio Lee, and he scored the winner off a free kick in the 74th minute on Saturday. The Korean international just keeps impressing me week in, week in, without. And, you know, with just solid play, both offensively and defensively, you know, is clearly experienced. Chris, as a former right back yourself at both the international and professional levels, just how good is Lee, and is he the best signing that any of the Canadian teams made in the offseason?
Well, to answer your question there, I think he is. I mean, just look at his pedigree. He's played all over the world. He's played in the World Cup. I believe that, you know, when you see him running in the 84th minute, even into the 90th minute, he's still running down that line and then running back, you know, trying to get back to his defense position. That just shows, I mean, at age, I think he's 36 now, that just shows the type of endurance that he has. And it also shows, you know, if you're a young player, if you want to play in a fullback position, you better have that endurance, and he has that. He's kept himself fit. You know, he's not injury-prone as it seems. And really, again, he has the endurance to really provide that width down the line. I actually don't think Vancouver utilizes Lee enough. I think once they did in the first half a little bit, they received some, you know, some good play down that right hand side, got some crosses in. But they need to implement him down the line more in the attack so that they can get some productivity from those crosses. I mean, what a signing he is. He's just you know, the ultimate professional, especially hearing about his personality. Seems like a top-class guy, and that's what Vancouver needed. They needed a player like that that has the pedigree, that's done just about everything in football, and a great role model for the Vancouver Whitecaps.
If there was one disconcerting aspect to the win, it had to be the fact that Eric Hasley again did not score, and the big forward looked extremely agitated when he was subbed off in the second half. I'm a big Hasley fan. You know, I just think he has buckets of talent, and you know, he's like a prototypical designated player in terms of, you know, what he brings to the pitch. You know, with the way his season has started out, is this just a run of play that Hasley needs to work his way through? Or are there genuine incompatibility issues with him and some of the other new players that who've joined the team and sort of asserted themselves?
Yeah, I'm not so sure if there's incompatibility issues. I believe that he needs to work through this period. I mean, in the first match against Montreal, he did have a part to play in the goals there. And he looked lively. He looked, you know, his creative self getting into the attack and really starting the attack. And, no, I think he needs to work through this rough patch that he's going through. I mean, the big man, again, he is just about the most talented player in the MLS. But right now it just seems, in his body language, yeah, it seems like he's a little bit off. I mean, you never know what's going on in players' heads, what's going on off the field. But he's a professional. He should get it right eventually because he has too much talent just to go to waste. And, yeah, I think we all saw it when he came off as a sub. He didn't look happy. Probably didn't look happy because he's not happy with himself, disappointed in himself that he didn't capitalize on those chances going forward. I know you were probably looking for him to score, Steve, when he had, you know, Marshall one-on-one there and running at the Columbus back line. Even taking him on by himself, you're expecting Eric Hasley to pull a rabbit out of the hat. So he didn't do it. And again, he needs to work through that. All players go through it. Look at Danny Kuperman's on Toronto. Those players are goal scorers, and they once one goal comes, hopefully, you know, a bag full will come and follow them. So for Vancouver's sake, if Eric Hasley starts to score some goals, then they'll be a really scary team.
Vancouver's next league match will be a rematch against the San Jose Earthquakes next Saturday. And given that San Jose defeated Vancouver 3-1 in San Jose earlier in the season, in what I think was Vancouver's first dropped points and first defeat this year, will the Whitecaps' performance and result against San Jose on the weekend say a lot about their ability to make adjustments?
Yeah, well, great question, Steve. I think it will say a lot about Martin Rennie's staff there, just to make adjustments to implement the right players in terms of the attack. I think, you know, sometimes, not to knock Vancouver's attack, but they look a little stale at times looking for options. That's where I think players like Kimiento come into play, Camilo as well. They need that creative side to them, and just to give the opposing defenders some havoc, wreak some havoc on that side. Vancouver, San Jose, Frank Yallop and Mark Watson, they're probably licking their chops, ready to go back home, as I call it. They're from that area, and they always look for a game against Vancouver. So just adds that much more pressure and, just that competitiveness to the game. So San Jose is a top-class team right now. It's showing, and they've done some work there, Frank Yallop and Mark Watson. So I'm really looking forward to that game, and it will show. I think it'll give Vancouver a good measurement of terms of, you know, just how much they can adjust and adapt in this league with their new team. So, again, I'm looking forward to that match.
Okay, moving on to Toronto FC. It doesn't need to be stated. The Reds set a dubious record last Saturday with their loss to Real Salt Lake, I believe tying a previous Kansas City side for the worst start in MLS history at 0-7. That said, I watched that game, and it was a valiant effort by Toronto FC. Hard fought, played against a good team. I thought TFC, literally at the end, seeing the players just almost passed out on the field, they really gave it everything that they had. You could see that, that there, this was, the guts were out there, and that they were pushing to try and avoid that record. They didn't quite make it, I think, again, probably because of the opposition and playing in Rio Tinto Stadium. And they lost on a Johnny Steele goal in injury time. Can't be much more of a heartbreaker than that. Chris, what did you make of the match, and where does TFC go from here?
I mean, there's so many topics within the game, within the match, within Toronto FC season that I could speak about. First off, Johnny Steele, former, USL and ASL player, former teammate of mine, to score that winner, I'm sure that's a great story, Steve. He's not a Canadian, but, he's played for Vancouver, and I mean, what a great story. We'll get onto that topic, playing in the NASL, in further podcasts, but kudos to Johnny Steele for scoring against Toronto FC. And like you said, you know what, Steve, you made that comment that the players look absolutely gutted after their valiant effort. And, I would agree with that. But I think that's what you want to see from every player after every match. You want to see them absolutely gutted that they left everything out on the pitch. And, make no mistake, Salt Lake is a top-class team in the MLS. They have been for years. They have depth. They have the players. The players know their roles in that system, and they have, game changers in every position. So it might not look like that, but Christ has that team ticking on all cylinders. And even early on in the season, they're not there yet, but they are just about the best team in the league. So for Toronto to go out and give that performance, and let me tell you, I thought at one point Toronto, when watching the game, I believe Toronto was going to pull a victory off and definitely get a point. Again, I was probably as gutted as them. Just as a former player, just knowing what that feels like to give everything you have and to come up, short. I will say this, that Aaron Vinter finally listened to me, Steve. I'm not sure if he listens to Red Nation, but he finally listened to me, and probably to you as well, Steve. Playing his best players at one time. He had to play Terry Dunfield, Julian de Guzman, and Thorsten Frings, and he needs to do that again. He can't afford. Toronto FC doesn't have the depth of Vancouver. And, he made some key substitutions. We'll get to that eventually. But, again, they had the tactics right. I still think they need to shore up that back line. The communication is not there. It's going to get better as the season comes. Let's hope that it doesn't take too long, because they really need to start winning games, in the season. I mean, people have already written them off. But I just think that, once you play your best players, that's the type of result and performance you're going to get. And that's what you want to see. So moving forward, Toronto FC has to go out in their next match and do the exact same thing, and this time hopefully be on the winning side.
Yeah, I've been a proponent of Aaron Vinter through much of his reign at Toronto FC. He's a classy man if you meet him in person, and I don't think anyone can question his football pedigree. I have been critical of some of the decisions he's made in recent weeks, you know, as the losing streak sort of came to a head. But I do think I agree with you. I think he got it right with both his lineup and his tactics in this match. I think if you'd looked at the schedule at the beginning of the season, you know, you probably would have pointed that Real Salt Lake match away as one that was, just circled almost as a loss. You know, it's just, I think they've only lost twice in, like, the last several years at Rio Tinto. And the fact that, that was their sort of record-setting game really, you know, put the onus on TFC to try and get something from that match. But generally, that wouldn't be one where you'd have expected much of a result. Strangely, in watching that match, everyone, the effort was obviously there, the passion was obviously there. But also two very consistent performers, Torsten Frings and Richard Eckersley. I guess you could call them the goats in this one. Eckersley with the own goal. And I said it in my match report for Red Nation. You know, is a team just plain cursed when their German designated player is missing on a penalty shot? What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, you've seen it last week with the Champions League matches that, you know, even the top-class players in the world miss penalties. And when Torsten Frings missed that, I was thinking, uh-oh, they're in trouble. But to bounce back from that type of, disappointment of missing that penalty, I felt Torsten Frings played all right. You know, obviously he's probably gutted after that. But, you know, he's a professional, he's experienced. And the team really picked up the slack, if you want to say. They kept going. I will mention Avila. He had a great game. The young lad had a fantastic match, I thought, threatening the back line of Salt Lake. And you mentioned Richard Eckersley. Steve, I think Richard Eckersley, he struggles in games where when he has to go forward, when it calls on him to go forward, and he does it quite often, but I don't think Toronto FC gets the quality that they need when he moves forward. And he had that own goal, and he is definitely, he works hard, he does, but I'm not too sure if it actually works out for Toronto FC. His timing of his runs might be a little off. And I actually think, and we're going to get to it, because I think Aaron Vinter should change his technical decision in terms of Richard Eckersley. I think that he should use another player. But we'll get to that, Steve.
You'd been calling for a few weeks for a Dunfield de Guzman Frings midfield. And, some people would say that midfield is a little bit too, I guess, you know, I hate to call Terry and Julian old because they're not old, but, not quite as athletic or, all three players not sort of being at the quickest point in their careers. How do you think they did? And, do those three players mesh as a midfield?
Yeah, I think they do mesh. Again, Toronto FC cannot afford to have their top players on the bench. I just think that, you know, athletically, no, they're probably not the most athletic midfield in the league. But it shows technically they're pretty sound. You know, Terry Dunfield can definitely spray balls and lengthen the pitch with his passes, his accurate passes. And Julian de Guzman is a ball winner. And I think Torsten Frings really has the tempo of the team. So, you know, if the team needs to stay back and just drop off, then he calls for that. And if the team needs to push forward, he really is the tempo of the team. And I think they complement each other. So some may argue with that. But again, can Toronto FC afford not to play their best players? I don't think so. Aaron Vinter needs to go out and play those players match in, match out, and get the best out of those players. And I think Julian de Guzman had a pretty good game, pretty solid game. He's experienced. He knows where to be, just like Torsten Frings, just like Terry Dunfield. And I think, again, Aaron Vinter has to implement those players every match at the same time as well.
Donnell Henry, who was on the podcast last week, made a substitute appearance late in that Real Salt Lake game. And I thought he made a great impression and played really well. So the question here on is, if Frings stays in the midfield and you're looking at Adrian Kahn as one of your starting central defenders, do you think Henry should be starting over Acevedo, and just playing more from here on out, given his athleticism, his size, and, just good showing so far at both the international and club level?
We'll see. We don't disagree too often, but I'm actually going to change things here. I actually think that Donnell Henry should be starting, but I actually think that Acevedo, and I'm not his biggest fan, I will come out and say I'm not his biggest fan, but just in terms of his athleticism, but I think he played pretty well in that Salt Lake game. Again, that's a good standard to play at. He will get better, hopefully. Toronto FC might not have the time to wait for him to get better, but I think he does enough where he should be starting Adrian Can and Ashton Morgan should definitely be covering him. But I think Donnell Henry should be starting over Richard Eckersley. I know Donnell Henry is not a natural fullback, but I think he does enough going forward. I mean, he'll be very simple, playing balls into the midfielder, playing it up front as he did when he first came into the match. So I actually think Richard Eckersley should be the one, left out of the squad. As I said, his timing of his runs is not always on, and I think he is a good substitution to bring on, if there's an injury or if there's just that lack of attacking play down the flank. So I think Richard Eckersley should be starting on the bench and implement Donnell Henry. So, Steve, I disagree with you there.
I don't know if I disagree. I mean, I'd certainly, at this point, you got to try new things. And, Henry did have that big game last year at right back, covering Breck Shea in the Champions League. So I don't disagree with you. I do think that Asphodel has some problems defending one-on-one. I'm not quite sure if he's quick at the league. I've actually thought that, he does quite well with the left foot on corners and, and actually bringing an offensive something to the team. But in terms of defense, he seems to be a weak link right now. So I guess that's definitely the back line is still something to look forward to. Now, Toronto FC's next match is against none other than Dwayne De Rosario and DC United. And, the question is, will this streak continue? And, Dero obviously had his issues with Toronto FC, and he usually raises his game when he has a chip on his shoulder. So, will Dero come up with a big game as he's done in the past against Toronto FC, and will he be making an 8-0 start to the, sorry, an 0-8 start to the season for Toronto FC?
Yeah, I wish it was the other way around, but I'll tell you what, if you're a Toronto FC fan, I would be a little bit worried here. I mean, Dwayne De Rosario and DC United are playing very well at the moment. Former player, TFC player, Michael Santos is also playing for DC, and they seem to be, linking up quite well. And with Toronto's, losing ways and DC's winning ways, and as you said, De Rosario usually plays with a chip on his shoulder against his former club. So, and it showed. He just played against Houston, and what happened there. So he was very successful. So if I was Toronto FC, I would be quite weary and worried, to be honest. Again, I'm saying that as a fan of soccer in Canada, but I just absolutely think that DC could give Toronto FC some trouble, and it's not going to look good for them. Looking forward into that match.
Yeah, I mean, obviously all Toronto FC fans would like to see Toronto FC get a win, but there's almost a Shakespearean aspect to the storylines now with Dero coming up in the next game. So it's going to be very interesting to watch a lot of storylines here, a lot of drama for TFC, which is good for people, keeping people engaged when the team's not playing well. At least there's a lot to watch out for. So still exciting times for TFC and the MLS. Moving on to Montreal, another solid performance by Montreal and an impressive 2-0 win over Portland on Saturday. Chris, what did you make of the win, and how do you like the manner in which Montreal now seems to really be putting it all together? At least in my mind, I think they are.
Yeah, Jesse Marsh has done quite well there. Montreal, I'll tell you, they're not the most exciting team to watch. Sorry about that, Montreal Impact, but I will say this. They know their system. They got the tactics right. They definitely have that right. What a performance they have when they play at home. And I think Jesse Marsh has done the right things in terms of implementing the key players that fit his system and fit his style of play. And, again, I think Montreal should be very happy with the way that they started out of the gate. As an expansion side, again, like I said, they try and play some good football, using the back line and using Ferrari, moving it quite quickly. They try to. It doesn't always pan off, but they get the results. And they're definitely a gritty team, and I think you would have to agree, Steve. When you have teams like that again have that grit, that determination, it often speaks, volumes, to the fans, and also it shows the personality of the coach. So Jesse Marsh has definitely done well there to implement his style of play and his, definitely. So, again, I like watching Montreal play because I always think, they're going to pull this one out, and as a Canadian, I want them to beat the American side. So, again, Montreal's done very well, and they have some Canadian players in that squad that are part of that. So it's good to see.
As you said, Montreal is undefeated at home. And, you know, that's what good MLS teams do. Not, most teams don't win a whole lot on the road, but they, you know, they get their points at home. And looking at the standings, they're in the MLS playoff hunt. So, Chris, you know, what has Jesse Marsh done right from a tactical standpoint?
From a tactical standpoint, he's implemented the key players to play his system. Ferrari there, the Italian center back, he's a definite leader. And I love to see players like that come over from Europe. You know, not all flashy, he gets the job done. And what Jesse Marsh has done, look, he's left Patrice Bernier out of the lineup. He doesn't feel right now, perhaps, that he fits his system, fits his style of play. And again, once the coach believes in his system, but more importantly, if he has the players that believe in his system, then the team going forward will get some results. So I think that's the biggest thing Jesse Marsh has done. He's implemented players that believe in his system, and they're willing to play. He's made some changes. You know, Gardner's out of the lineup at the left back position, and now, you know, Wall's in there. So, you know, you can see that little changes, key changes that Jesse Marsh has done, and he knows the league. He's played in the league. He's coached at a high level. And, he's going to be successful, as it shows right now.
You've mentioned a couple of interesting players there, Bernardo Corradi and Patrice Bernier. Corradi came to the Impact with a Serie A pedigree, and it looked like it took him a few games to adjust to the MLS, but, you know, he's looking like he's a solid performer in the last few matches. You know, how do you like what he's brought to the team?
Yeah, you know, early on, when he first came to the club, I didn't think that it was going to work out. I just thought that, you know, he's getting up there in age, a little bit slow, sluggish player, but he's showing that he has a lot left in those legs, and he's another leader. I mean, I like his comments after the game. You know, they're definitely willing to do what it takes to win, and also that, you know, he steps up to take that penalty there. He's there. He's a professional that has played, you know, how many matches in Serie A, and he is a key player for them, because I look, you know, if they don't have him in the lineup, you know, I don't think they have the players to complement what he has. So it's a great signing, and that's a very key signing, and it's similar to the Lee signing at Vancouver. You know, I'm not too sure if everybody expected Lee to be the player that he is for Vancouver, and I'm not sure everybody expected Karate to be the player that's at Montreal or for Montreal. So it's a great signing, or it's proving to be a great signing, and hopefully he can stay injury-free and continue to score goals for them, because they definitely need him.
You mentioned Patrice Bernier and the fact that he hasn't played in the last several games. You know, Patrice, I'm a fan too. You've said that on the podcast several times, and I'm a big Patrice Bernier fan. You know, and one of the things I liked about Montreal joining the MLS this year and Patrice signing with them was the fact that I was going to be able to watch him week in, week out. So, you know, I can't deny that it's disappointing when Marsh decides to go with another player. You know, I think we all want to see our Canadian national team players playing week in, week out, and getting that sharpness. You know, Patrice has said all the right things. You know, he's a classy player. He's a pro, you know, about waiting for his chance and working his way back in. And Marsh has said the same thing as well, but it's just a situation. It seemed like, you know, Patrice was doing his job early on in the season, but maybe Colin Warner is just, you know, having a run of play where you can't take him out of the lineup.
Yeah, I'm not too sure what to make of this one. I mean, there are a few things here. As a Canadian, you know, international, Patrice Bernier needs to play matches, especially in this qualifying year. And, you know, right now he's out of the lineup. I think what Jesse Marsh has done maybe is that, you know, he's put in a player that covers a little bit more ground than Patrice Bernier in terms of the matches that they're playing in MLS. And maybe Patrice Bernier is just out of sorts in terms of coming back to North America and playing. He's still finding his feet, and I hope that's the case, because he has, you know, he's what a professional he is off the field. You know, the maturity that he's shown throughout the years of moving over to Europe and just playing there and having a successful career, and he definitely has the qualities to play in MLS. But I think maybe it's a little bit of everything. You know, Jesse Marsh wants a certain player in that role, and right now Patrice Bernier is not that player for him. So, he, you know, coaches have to make tough decisions, and right now that's the decision that leaves Patrice Bernier on the bench. Again, it's not a good thing for Patrice going forward. You know, he needs to play matches in this qualifying, you know, round with Canada, and just to be at, you know, in his top fitness at this top level of playing and performance. So hopefully he can get back into the lineup for Canadian soccer fans' sakes. But, you know, for Montreal right now, I don't think Jesse Marsh is too bothered. I mean, right now the club's winning and performing quite well. So, you know, a little bit of give and take. But I hope it works out for Patrice because he's come a long way to go off to Europe, and now he's come back to, you know, play in front of his hometown and his family and friends. So hope it works out for him and the club.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for Marsh to tinker with a lineup that's doing well at the moment. So, you know, it may just be that it's going to take a defeat or a poor performance by the team for some other players to get a chance. One thing that I think that Montreal has done very well is that Jesse Marsh has implemented a very consistent lineup. You know, he'll change up the forwards here or there, but he rarely makes more than, you know, one or two changes to his lineup every week. And I think very importantly, he's now for several games, I think four or five, he's allowed that back line, you know, with four consistent starters to just play week in, week out, get used to each other. And I think they're reaping the benefits of a really solid back four now. Interestingly, my understanding is that Nelson Rivas, their big South American signing before the season, is going to be available for selection soon. So, you know, that's an interesting story to watch there in terms of, you know, the back line hasn't shown any cracks over the last several weeks, but, you know, Rivas was certainly signed to not to be a sub, but to be a big part of this team. So, Chris, what do you make of the back line situation?
I mean, once Rivas comes back, I think it just gives, it adds to Montreal's depth. So their back line right now, I think they're playing Valentin right now at right back, and I think, you know, as a young player that looks to do quite well. He has a lot to learn, but whenever a player like that has the quality, and once he's playing, he'll eventually improve and feel comfortable at that position. So right now I would say, you know, Wall doesn't have the best pace, but I think he's experienced enough to handle the players that he's facing, the opposing players. So right now they have, you know, something going for them. You know, the communication seems to be there and the continuity with playing match in, match out, with Rivas coming back again. In a way, I would say baby steps in terms of, you know, placing him back into the lineup. Again, you don't want to tinker with a winning squad. And they have some big games coming up in the next few matches, you know, in the Canadian Championship and in the MLS, their MLS season. So you don't want to tinker too much. So I'm sure Rivas will get his chance, and the back line will be tested moving forward, of course. So they definitely have recovered and bounced back from their defeat in New York, I should say. So it's a good sign for Jesse Marsh and the Montreal Impact.
Montreal's next league match is certainly a tough one. Certainly a match in which they're going to be tested, and the back line is going to be tested. It's away against Sporting Kansas City at Livestrong Sporting Park. You know, one of the best teams in the league right now in a top run of form. Chris, how do you like Montreal's chances in that one? And, you know, if you're Jesse Marsh, how would you approach it?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think that match is a great, you know, it sets the bar for where they're at. Kansas City, Sporting KC is a quality side, and they've got off to a good start here, Sporting KC has. So that's a good test for Montreal. They'll definitely find out where they stand in terms of the MLS meat, you know, the cream of the crop. So they'll definitely figure that out right away once they step onto that pitch. And how does Jesse Marsh approach that one? I don't think he messes too much with his lineup. You know, you don't tinker with things that are working for you. So why would he do that going forward into that match? Hopefully their players that are injured, they come back healthy, and he can have a full squad, because that's what they'll need going into KC, especially on the road. I think that's where Montreal's season, where they will determine their season, on the road. Because at home it shows they can perform, they can get results and win matches. You know, on the road, can they go to Sporting KC and get a point? So Jesse Marsh should definitely play his top players, as I'm sure he is. Again, Jesse Marsh is experienced, he knows the league. He knows how to, I think, you know, definitely get points and get a result. So he's right now, I mean, he's in the good books in terms of the Saputo organization there and the Montreal Impact. So Jesse Marsh knows best right now. He plays his best players, and right now it shows.
We've been dancing around it so far and focusing on the league, but, you know, a big tournament for Canadian soccer is going to be kicking off on Wednesday, and that's the Amway Canadian Championship. And, you know, we have an interview every week on the podcast, and this week I thought it would be interesting to speak with Edward Sabrango of the Montreal Impact. you know, to help us sort of preview and set up that tournament. Sabrango has, you know, as a veteran of Canadian soccer, he's played for Vancouver, played for Montreal. He made his MLS debut on the weekend for Montreal, and he played a big role in Montreal's Canadian Championship win and subsequent CONCACAF Champions League run back in 2008 and 2009. So we're excited to speak with Edward Sabrango this week on the North of 49 podcast. Eduardo, congratulations on recently making your Major League Soccer debut against Portland. How do you think your first appearance at the MLS level went?
Well, it was a sure experience. It was only a few minutes at the end of the game, but you know, obviously it was very, very special, and I enjoyed the moment, and it was really nice for the first time. You know, obviously, to be on the field and MLS was fantastic. You know, the fans were great, and yeah, like I say, I enjoyed the moment very much.
Does it make it more enjoyable when it comes in a victory?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, it was a huge win for us. We need those 3 points, and no, we did well. And obviously, yeah, it was be part of when you win. It's always nicer.
You're currently the oldest player in the league at 39 years old. You obviously proved to the Impact organization that you're still able to compete at a very high level at an age when most players have retired. What is the secret to your longevity, and how have you maintained your fitness towards remaining competitive in North American soccer, which is usually very physical and athletic?
Yeah, well, I think my secret is I eat rice and beans every day. No, just kidding. No, I don't know. Obviously, I've been lucky to just feel fit. Obviously, I worked really hard on practice and the off season, and I think, you know, all the hard work over the years is paying off for me to continue playing at this stage in on my career.
You're both a very experienced player and one of the few players who played a significant role for Montreal during their NASL years. Has the Montreal management staff given you specific details about your role with the Impact MLS team?
No, it's not. Well, obviously, I have a lot of experience, it's going to be one of my roles. But you know, it hasn't been a specific, speech or talk with the coach that he say, okay, this is your role. You know, he's want me to be ready for every game, like I'm going to play, and the staff like off the field, being a role model and helping the younger players. That's part of what a player becomes when he's older, for sure.
Obviously, the roster has changed considerably since last year, but maybe the biggest change the team made ahead of moving to the MLS was the hiring of Jesse Marsh as head coach. How do you like playing for Jesse, and how does he differ from Mark Dos Santos and Nick DeSantis?
Jesse is been great. He's a very honest coach, really hard work person as well. Very, very positive as a coach as well, so that helps. He's been great, and obviously he's showing me a lot of support to sign me in with the team. And he's been great, I just want to do my best to pay him off for his support.
I'm located in Toronto, but I have managed to watch every one of the Impact's MLS matches on television. And the team looks to be getting better with every game and has generally been very competitive for an expansion team. How do you like the way the team is shaping up, and how do you like the Impact's chances of qualifying for the MLS playoffs in their first season in the league?
Well, obviously our goals are to make the playoffs. It doesn't really matter if we are an expansion team or not. You know, we don't really look ourselves as an expansion team. We are a team that is part of the MLS, and we want to do well. And I think we have done well, in the first 7-8 games of the season. We compete with most of the teams that we play already, and at times we look, better than them. And obviously, the results haven't got our way as we like. But
you know, we have a really good team that who likes to play and to compete, and then I think, like you say, it's been getting better and better, and you know, now we are going to have some home game as well, and we want to make sure we do well at home and start you know, little by little, you know, getting up in the standings.
Looking ahead to the Amway Canadian Championship tournament that will kick off this week, many people consider Montreal's winning the tournament in 2008 and subsequent run in the CONCACAF Champions League to have been key moments for the Impact franchise and key variables in terms of credibility for the organization's eventual move to the MLS. How important was that Canadian Championship victory and Champions League run for the Montreal Impact and professional soccer in Montreal?
Well, obviously it was huge for the Impact organization, for the city of Montreal, you know, for Canada as well. You know, we were all the way almost to the semifinals. You know, it's funny because this morning we talked about that, and, you know, Nick DeSantis spoke a bit about, you know, the history and how important is this game for us. And, no, that was huge for the team back then, and to give the building to the organization. And now that we're in the MLS, we're going to make sure that we do well, and hopefully we can have another run like we did back in 2008-2009.
You were a key player for Montreal in that Canadian Championship win, and I believe the Golden Boot winner for the tournament. Given your experience and success in that particular competition, what do you think are some of the keys to doing well in the Canadian Championship tournament and the format that it is in?
Well, I think it's completely different from the regular league. The games, you had to be prepared mentally and ready to raise the level of players and the intensity. If you don't, you can be out of the competition in a week. So I think the more important is to know how short the competition can be and to take the game like it's a playoff game and make sure when the whistle, you know, when the referee whistles that you are ready to compete, because if not, you can be down 1-0 and then you know it's only two games really to go to the next round. So it's very important every minute, you know, 180 minutes of the, you know, the total of the two games, and you have to be ready mentally that teams are going to play, the intention is going to go higher, and if you're ready, I think you can do well.
Looking ahead to Wednesday's match that will open the tournament at home for Montreal, it's a situation where the majority of the players on the current Impact roster will be competing in the tournament for the first time. As someone with experience in the competition, how have you been advising other players and what to expect?
Well, like I said, that we did this morning. We talked about, you know, how important it is for, because they have the USN Cup there as well, but a lot of things don't take us seriously. For us, it's huge because, you know, it's pride. You want to be the best team in Canada, and also as well because the team experience what I experienced before, that they know how huge can be those games for the club. So yeah, just to make sure that we pass the message around the guys, and but I think the guys know after, you know, Nick talked a bit and Jesse mentioned as well, and that we want to win this competition. So I think the guys are, you know what to expect, and they're ready for the challenge.
Montreal's opponent in the opening round of the championship is Toronto FC. They've struggled in the MLS this year, and many people maintain that TFC, who started the year with very competitive matches in the later stages of the Champions League, struggled because of the pressure related to competing in both the MLS and the Champions League at the same time. Given that possible issue and the fact that Montreal is right now in a good position to battle for an MLS playoff spot, how much of a priority is the Canadian Championship for Jesse Marsh and the rest of the organization?
Well, it's a huge priority. We want to, like I said, we want to win the championship. And it doesn't really change how Toronto is doing. You know, it's, obviously they're going to come here to do well, because the results lately haven't gone their way. But you know, like we watch all their games, and they have actually played well, and sometimes this league is, you know, from, you know, the borders between winning and losing, they're really sure, and And like I said, I think they've been unlucky, but you know, we expect them to. But no, for us, it's a huge priority to do well against Toronto.
One more question for you, and just looking at Wednesday's match against TFC, Montreal surely must take some confidence from the fact that the team has already defeated TFC this season. Toronto, you know, as we've already discussed, are struggling quite badly right now. I'm wondering, do you think that is an advantage for Montreal, or do you think that a team in Toronto's situation presents a particular challenge, given that they are due for a breakout win and have had they've had their pride wounded recently?
No, I think it's going to be a complete different game from the league game that we played already, few weeks back. So no, I think for them it's kind of like a new beginning for them. It's kind of like, you know, they're going to put the league in a side for a moment, and they're going to concentrate in the Canada Cup. And I think it's going to be a different game, obviously, we can take some experience from the game that we played before, but again, because the character of the competition is going to be a completely different game.
That was Eduardo Sabrango of the Montreal Impact. Chris, we're back here on the North of 49 podcast, and for this portion of the podcast, I guess you could call this our Amway Canadian Championship preview. So the tournament kicks off this Wednesday night, and all four teams, Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, and Edmonton, will be in action. We've already alluded to Toronto and Montreal facing off, so why don't we start off by talking about that match on Wednesday. It's going to be played in Montreal, and you know, Toronto and Montreal, obviously there's a rivalry there. They've already played once this year in the league with Montreal coming out on top. Everyone is well aware of TFC's situation in the league and you know, the problems the club is having at the moment. You know, given that the record has been set and you know, they're getting a break from league play, this is the Canadian Championship, a tournament that they've owned for the last several years and been, they're the reigning champions. Is this a fresh start for TFC?
I think if TFC if they want to save their season and give something back to the fans, they're going to have to give everything they've got, as they say, in this Amway Canadian Championship. And Steve, you don't even have to ask me, who am I picking? I'm going to pick Toronto FC away from home. I think Toronto FC is going to go into Montreal, into Montreal's home ground, and beat Montreal. You know, again, that's maybe, you know, going out on a limb there, but I think that Toronto FC is going to pull out a victory there. I think Aaron Vinter and crew, they're going to pull out that victory and, you know, give their fans something back. A little bit of hope, a glimmer of hope, you know, some type of ray of sunlight there with the squad.
Yeah, from Toronto FC's standpoint, you'd think another loss to Montreal would be a disaster at this point, and Aaron Vinter's probably got to be feeling the pressure. You know, as well as the rest of his staff and the players. I guess if I could classify this matchup, it looks like it would be, you know, as much as they haven't been finishing their chances, Toronto's 4-3-3 offense and still a little bit of a shaky back line against Montreal, who are defensively solid but not quite an offensive powerhouse. With the way these two teams match up, you know, do you think we're going to see some exciting matches in the two legs?
Yeah, I think we will. Just, I mean, again, from a rivalry standpoint, these two teams have a history going back to when Toronto FC first started in the MLS in 2007. And Montreal's success, of course. Toronto FC has had success in this Canadian Championship. So, you know what? I think Toronto FC matches up quite well against Montreal, and that's why I'm picking them. I don't think Montreal has the offensive threat. I know they have Karate and Niasse there, but I think Toronto FC's backline can handle and deal with that. However, I think Toronto's midfield, if Aaron Vinter plays that strong midfield three of Dunfield, De Guzman, and Frings, you know, I just think that they're a little bit in better shape there. And I think going forward, I think Toronto FC has a little bit more threat, and I don't think Montreal can handle that back line of Montreal can handle Toronto FC's attack right now. So, and also, maybe Jesse Marsh isn't going to play his best players. Maybe it gives some time to Patrice Bernier. Not to say he's not one of the best players, but he's going to give some time to Rivas, perhaps, and Bernier, players that haven't played in the matches recently. So, you know, they may be out of sync, out of flow, and Toronto FC will play their best players. So, you know, I think that they will come on top just because of that and the key matchups there.
Yeah, speaking of those key matchups, let's both pick one player on each team who we think might be the key player for each team over the two legs. He hasn't played, and I haven't even received confirmation that he's going to play against Montreal. But if he's fit, I would think that Danny Kovermans is a key player for Toronto, just in terms of putting the ball in the back of the net and testing that Montreal back line. And conversely, I think the key player for Montreal is Matteo Ferrari. I think he's been great so far. I mean, I think he struggled in that first game, but since then he's been rock solid, and he's sort of been the defensive linchpin on that team. So almost a head-to-head matchup with Kovermans and Ferrari for me. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, you know what, Steve? I guess I am going to copy you here and select those two. I think that's a key matchup there. Kovermans, I believe, will score. I don't believe he scored yet this season, Steve. It's funny to say that, but I think that Kovermans will score his first goal this year against Montreal in the Canadian Championship. I think he'll come into that match, you know, looking to show the fans and show his coach that he still has what it takes to be a top player in the league. So I think he'll score his first goal in the Canadian Championship.
Okay, as for predictions then, you've already stated yours. You're going with Toronto FC. And I'm going to disagree with you. I've watched Montreal closely, and I just think they're solid. And I think TFC is fragile right now. Obviously, it's going to be a close series, but I'm going to pick Montreal. I think the first goal in both games is going to be huge. But, I see Montreal with the momentum right now, and I think TFC has to have a fragile psyche at this point. So, we'll obviously be back next week. We'll see which way that first leg went and how it sets up the second leg back in Toronto.
Looking forward to it.
Moving on to the other game in the competition, it's the Vancouver Whitecaps versus FC Edmonton. And that's an interesting matchup as well. I think most people are assuming that that Vancouver is just going to roll over Edmonton just based on, what we've already talked about, the talent at every position on the field and the depth that Montreal possesses. But Edmonton are an interesting team as well. I think they're off to a slow start in the NASL, but they did train all off season, and they have that Dutch head coach and Dutch coaching staff as well. So an interesting matchup there. And also some history between these two clubs. Martin Rennie is coming over from Carolina and brought a number of his players with them. And it's my understanding that there's, I don't know if you call it bad blood, but some lingering feelings between some of the FC Edmonton players and those players that came over from the Carolina Railhawks. So certainly Edmonton is going to be motivated. It's a marquee event for them, and then you've got that history as well. Are you looking forward to those games, and how do you see that first leg going?
Yeah, I think that's a great matchup. As you mentioned, there's a rivalry there already, just because players have crossed paths with Martin Rennie and with Vancouver Whitecaps. So I'm really looking forward to that match. I will say this, that Vancouver has too much depth, and they really should not be losing that match. And, I think they're the only Canadian team not to win the championship so far, the Canadian Championship, in terms of the MLS 3 now. So they've invested a lot to actually play and actually compete and get to the championship match and then actually win it to move on to the CONCACAF qualifying round. So I look to Vancouver to actually win this match quite handily and not have any problems with Edmonton. And not to say that Edmonton is not a competitive side, but I just think Vancouver has too much depth to handle right now for FC Edmonton.
Yeah, I mean, it's a match between the MLS and the NASL. And you touched on this with some of your comments earlier in the podcast. It's always interesting to watch these games, just to see if the gulf between the two leagues is as much as some people make it out to be. I don't think it is. I think there's some talent. I do think that FC Edmonton is still a very young team, whereas Vancouver, I think, has more veterans and a little bit more experience that's going to give them a bit of an advantage. But it is an interesting matchup to watch for that whole MLS versus NASL thing. Vancouver, you know, as we've touched on, just has depth. They have the depth for this competition to be able to play in the league and play in the Canadian Championship at the same time. So their depth is I think Vancouver's key. Interestingly enough, Edmonton has had some time off after their last league match, and they've had 10 days to prepare for this first leg. So they've really been focusing on getting ready for Vancouver. So, you know, what do you think? Is having that large stretch of time off to prepare, is that going to leave Edmonton rusty, or is that going to you know, have them all set to maybe get an upset?
Well, again, you can look at it from a different angle here. I think that Vancouver is going to play some players in that game, like Eric Hasley, perhaps, that, you know, has been a little bit out of sorts. And, I mean, Steve, if you're the back line of FC Edmonton, you're a player of Eric Hasley. So I think that FC Edmonton taking their break there, yes, they're preparing tactics, you know, from a tactical standpoint. I think they're going to try and get some things right. But I just think that Vancouver has too much depth. The players that they're going to be playing in that match, probably Camilo's going to feature in that match if his injury is not too bad, and Kimi Antonen, and some players that haven't received minutes in the recent games. So FC Edmonton could have their backs up against the wall, and hopefully for their sake, they're going to be like a cage animal, ready to, you know, attack and really, you know, outperform Vancouver and test that back line. It'll be interesting to see the approach that Martin Rennie takes with the players at his disposal if he plays a starting, you know, back four there. So, again, FC Edmonton has had some time off, and I just think those players, they will be a little bit rusty. Hopefully they can hold off that the foray of attack that Vancouver will definitely, you know, throw at them in terms of, you know, the start of the match. So FC Edmonton, they'll have their hands full going into that match.
In terms of the key players to watch in both teams and, you know, key matchups, I'm looking at this one as a battle of the back lines. As you said, you know, FC Edmonton could have their hands full with Vancouver's offense. And, you know, and Vancouver just needs to continue along the way they've been playing for the most part this season with their back line shining very brightly. So in that sense, you know, my picks for players to watch are Vancouver captain Jay Demerit and FC Edmonton vice captain, I believe, Paul Hamilton, who leads that back line for Edmonton. I think those two players are going to have you know, big performances in both the first and second leg in helping their teams, you know, try and get to a victory. What do you think, Chris? Who are you looking at?
Yeah, I'm definitely looking at a former guest of Red Nation North 49 podcast. We featured him, Kyle Porter. He was a former Vancouver Whitecaps player, and I just always know that when he plays Vancouver, his former club, he really looks to these games, and I know he'll be gearing up to run at that back line and really test them. I often think that attackers, you know, don't test defenders in terms of running at them with pace and the creativity. So I'll look to Kyle Porter to really cause some havoc, you know, wreak some havoc against not his former teammates perhaps, but his former club and test that back line. And I'd like to see him, you know, come up against Lee. I'd like to see Lee. I know Lee actually played against Breck Shea the other day, and he did quite well. So it'll be interesting to see if Lee plays in that match, if he features, you know, Lee versus Kyle Porter, you know, just dealing with that pace and creative side of a player, of a Canadian player like Kyle Porter. So those are my two players there.
Okay. As we did with the other game, let's both get our predictions on the record. My heart says FC Edmonton just because of the Canadian content, but my mind definitely says that Vancouver are just too good. So Vancouver is my pick for Wednesday's match. And, you know, what are you thinking, Chris?
Well, Steve, if I said FC Edmonton, people would probably be asking me if I was off my rocker. But, no, I'm going to pick Vancouver, the Whitecaps. I just think they have too much depth, too much creativity and attacking options for FC Edmonton to handle. So I think that, and I'll even give a score line, Steve, I think that Vancouver's going to win, you know, 2-3-0 here. Again, not to say that FC Edmonton can't put together a performance and win the match, but I just think in terms, you know, quite handily. So it'll be interesting to watch, to say the least, though.
Okay, well, we'll see how those matches played out, and it's, you know, it's exciting times. That Canadian Championship is always, you know, a big thing, and you know, it's bragging rights for the professional teams in Canada. So it's going to be an interesting tournament to watch, as always. And we'll be back next week to to break down how the first legs went and to set up the games next week as that tournament moves towards a final. So thanks for you know, your analysis and thoughts, Chris, and thanks to everybody for listening. And we'll be back next week.